And when we come back with Robert Morningstar, let's talk about Apollo, that program. What does he have to say about that? That's next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, Robert Morningstar with us. Robert, let's wrap up the MJ-12 and get into the Apollo program. Okay. Do you think it's still around, MJ-12?
No, I don't. I believe that it has molted into something else. It's no longer MJ-12. I would like to just touch briefly on one point. One of the great criticisms of Corso's book was that he said that the technology had been taken from the Roswell craft and distributed to industry and scientific labs for further development, and that it produced transistors, lasers, masers, and a lot of the things that we have today, like DVD players. You know, they used laser lights and.
All reverse engineered technology.
Right. Let's listen to this. Because of the unique nature of the material under study, a multi-layered security structure has been in effect. Most of the results have been given to private research and development labs for further study. Majestic is currently focused on PSYOP development for Cold War activities, Cold War counterintelligence activities. And utilization of paperclip specialists has yielded valuable results in weapons research, in areas of flight dynamics, biological and chemical agents, mind control, and intelligence gathering techniques. That, in a nutshell, is talking about the distribution of this information and technology throughout the military-industrial complex, but also says about the development of a multi-layered security structure. And part of this, as far as the counterintelligence, Cold War counterintelligence activities, involved making the Russians believe that we did not believe in UFOs. So there was this double think thing happening.
Right.
To say to the Russians, America doesn't believe in UFOs, not at all, couldn't possibly exist. And the Russians are saying to themselves, well, you know, we do know that those things exist because we see them in our airspace. They're probably lying and they're probably American. You understand? They wanted to make the Russians think that we didn't believe in UFOs because we were actually the people who were sending UFOs into Russia, and not that they were extraterrestrial. It's a very, very unusual attack plan, because psychological warfare is an attack. And the JFK assassination was a psychological warfare attack on the United States that has led to the current situation that we have here. As I said, the mafia element was working hand in glove with the CIA, and they enlisted the mafia element to kill President Kennedy. And slowly, a kind of mafia mentality overtook the U.S. government in enforcing the silence, getting rid of uncooperative witnesses who insisted that what they were seeing was what they had seen was actual fact. Those who heard more than three bullets, those who knew that Jack Ruby was a bosom buddy of J.D. Tippit, that he knew Oswald. Well, people were swept off the street and either intimidated into silence or silenced permanently. You know? So what we have today, I consider it gangster government and Chicago-based gangster government.
And it hasn't changed.
It has changed in that it has become, what I see is that the current administration is laying down a matrix for the communization of the United States. The Obamacare bill in itself is an electronic tyranny that I've been trying to expose since I first read the bill when it was put out. I keep asking people, how could anybody believe in a person like Nancy Pelosi, who said we have to pass the bill before we know what's in it? What if I proposed a bill that took away all your civil liberties?
Nobody read it.
All your privacy, and say, we got to pass this bill, and then we'll find out what it says. Well, that's precisely what has happened. You know that that the Obamacare bill contains about 20 references to dental surveillance of the public by dentists?
Yeah,
get the Obamacare bill downloaded and type in the word surveillance and just keep going.
Yeah, it's
but,
weird.
I think that this is a direct offshoot of what the scheme that was foisted on us. And you know, can I say something?
Yeah.
Communists did kill President Kennedy. But those communists were called the Democratic Party. Democrat, in Russian, the word Bolshevik means Democrat. So there are varying shades of red and pink and even gray democracy. But the Dixiecrats in particular were involved with going along with Johnson because the Kennedy killing had many levels to it, and one of them was revenge.
Do you think it was started? I mean, he gets elected in 1960, takes office January of 61. At what point do they decide to do him in?
I'll tell you, I believe that point came after the Cuban Missile Crisis, which was October 1962. And on November 12, 1962, President Kennedy had a meeting with the executive committee, which involved James R. Webb, the director of NASA. James R. Webb is a very interesting person. He is the man who really engineered and formed the military-industrial complex. During World War II, he was a chairman of the Office of Budget and Management, and he was the one who doled out the contracts. In the period of the UFO and military-industrial complex development during the Eisenhower years, he's the one who was making the deals, bringing in the industry that would build our atomic submarines, Boeing building the Boeing B-52, and he was the guy who was the orchestrator. Then he's appointed NASA director. And on November 12, 1962, they had a meeting, which I've heard a recording of this meeting, and Kennedy is telling Webb and the Pentagon and the State Department and everybody who's present, we're going to the moon. We have to go to the moon and get there before the Russians, because if the Russians get to the moon before we do, it'll prove to the world that communism is a better system. And Webb starts arguing with the president and talking down to him. Webb was then, I guess, in his 60s. And he's talking down to Jack Kennedy as if he's a young whippersnapper and doesn't know what he's talking about. And Kennedy tells him, "Well, we've rearranged our priorities, and getting to the moon is the most important element of NASA mission." And he said, no, we already have plans for the development of space. First, we have to take over local space. We have to command and control local space. We have to build a space station. And maybe we can go to the moon, 10 years later or 15 years from now. We're not ready. Kennedy says, no, we're not. We're going to go to the moon. And he keeps arguing, and he frustrates President Kennedy so much that President Kennedy looks out and to the people. I imagine he looked out at all of them, because he said, "Doesn't he get it?" Just like that. He said, "What's with this guy?"
Right in front of him, right?
Adding with, "What's with this guy?" But he said, "What? Doesn't he get it?" And basically asked somebody else to explain it to him. And he's adamant that, no, we're going to do it. We have our plans. I'm the boss of NASA. And Kennedy's telling him, no, I'm the boss. I'm the president, and we're going to the moon. And it's a really angry end of the meeting, and Kennedy stalks out. There's some people follow him out, but the microphones are left on, and the people that remain start very uncomfortably murmuring about, what are we going to do about this? See? Because the president was being intentionally kept out of the loop, and Kennedy in particular was being blocked from knowledge of UFOs, and he knew that he was being stonewalled. So between November 1962 and November 1963, he started, lopping heads you might say. One of the things he did was in June of 1963, he ordered the end of the Operations Policy Board, which had been, antecedently, it had been called the Psychological Strategy Board. This was the group that controlled how to keep UFOs secret and manipulate public opinion to disbelieve in UFOs and use disinformation technology to keep the whole world fooled.
Portray people as quacks and everything else.
Right, but more importantly, these two groups started to initiate their own policy initiatives. They started running black operations behind his back, and he felt that he could not trust these people because it's the president who sets foreign policy, and these people were steering foreign policy through black operations. And this is a danger that had been communicated to President Eisenhower by none other than Joseph B. Kennedy. Joseph Kennedy warned Eisenhower early in his administration that he should get rid of the Dulles brothers, because Joe Kennedy had investigated the Dulles brothers in the 30s and 40s and found that they had been supporting Hitler. They helped to build up Hitler's war machine. Then, Alan Dulles was in OSS, he protected many of his German friends. One of the reasons that the Russians got to Berlin first was that Dulles told General Eisenhower that there were a large number of troops in the Black Forest and that the Black Forest had to be cleaned out before he proceeded to Berlin. So Eisenhower delayed the assault, the run to Berlin to clean up the Black Forest, and there were no soldiers there. And what Dulles had done was delay him so that General Wolfe, a friend of his, and his armies could escape from the Russians. Because Germans did not want to be captured by the Russians. The Russians did not negotiate. The Russians were out for revenge because of what the Germans had done to everybody.
To their homeland.
When they started in Poland, they went through Ukraine, they ate up everything, got to Stalingrad. Khrushchev stood them down, they got pushed back, and they got pushed back, and they did not want to be captured by the Russians.
They would have been shot on the site.
And so the Trojan horse plan was hatched by General Reinhard Gehlen. He was their top Nazi spy. And the top Nazi spy was spying. Their intelligence operations had been amalgamated with their rocket operations in 1943. Hitler ordered that rocket science and intelligence would be brought together under one roof, and this organization was renamed the Middle Work, MITTELWERK, Middle Works, Central Works. And so those Central Works hatched a plan in prison to surrender themselves to the Americans in return for protection from the Russians, and that they would give us their spy network in the Soviet Union behind what would become the Iron Curtain later. We had no intelligence assets at all in Russia, and the Germans had intelligence and spies in there since the 20s. So they offered that to the United States, which had no assets there. And then before Operation Paperclip, Wernher von Braun escaped with his top scientists and their documents, and they hid both the documents and the remaining hardware that they could salvage in the forest, and surrendered themselves to the American Army. And the person that captured Wernher von Braun was the man who was tried by Jim Garrison, Captain Clay Shaw. Clay Shaw. Captain Clay Shaw was a very accomplished Army captain.
That's a great story.
Who fought very valiantly in World War II, and he captured Wernher von Braun, brought him in. And then von Braun made the same offer that General Galen made, and this offer was accepted by a General Siebert, an American of German descent, and it was approved by General Siebert without the knowledge of President Truman. And so the paperclip scientists who are referred to in this MJ-12 memo, which was a euphemism, paperclip was a euphemism for Nazi, mm-hmm. or German, which was right. not a nice word, even in 1952. So that's the Trojan horse, George. The Trojan horse, it surrendered. It came in and brought into our nation's intelligence and military and scientific bodies a Nazi virus.
That's right.
They taught us how to behave like them. And now that 50 years have gone by, and all of those original Nazi scientists have died and gone, the process, the protocols, which they inculcated in our scientists, are our standard operating procedure. It's like a mad scientist who came in and built a robot and programmed a robot, and this robot builds other robots that are programmed on the same thing. So the flesh and blood scientist dies away, but the robot keeps reproducing itself yep. and employing the same strategies.
Yet the Nazis did get us to the moon, didn't they, Robert?
Well, I think, honestly, that we could have gotten to the moon on our own in probably a more efficient way. And by that I mean American science was just as good and better than the Nazis. We did beat them. And I would say, compare a P-51 to a Messerschmitt. Yeah, the Messerschmitt was the greatest fighter of 1940, maybe 41. But once we got to work and we took our aerodynamic designs and combined them with the British Merlin engine, we produced the P-51, which was called the most perfect aerodynamic machine of World War II until jets came in. As a matter of fact, P-51s shot down German jets. One of the Tuskegee Airmen shot down a German ME-262, and Chuck Yeager, the man who broke the sound barrier, he knocked off. He had Hawkeyes, you know? Chuck Yeager, he had Hawkeyes. He could see planes 50 miles away.
Oh, what a great pilot.
He spotted an ME-262 returning to base. He got on its tail in his P-51. He blew it to smithereens. So I do have confidence that with the imperative that Kennedy had proposed, our scientists are better than their scientists, and I really do believe that. But out of expediency and out of fear, we accepted the deal, a deal with the devil. And you know what? I have
and the Russians did too, didn't they?
I have General, again, they got Germans too. So yeah. Germans got both the Russians into space and us to the moon, okay?
That's right.
But I'm certain that there was another way, especially if we recovered these craft, the alien craft in 1947, and we're already tinkering. Imagine, 1947, it's recovered. Corso says that the technology was disseminated to industry, and within a year and a half of that event, the transistor was discovered. And within a couple of years of that, amazers and lasers were developed. I'm quite certain that we have a two-tier space program, and that the Apollo rocket nuts and bolts program was the public pop science facade, and the other one, which some people call the Navy 10th Fleet, that there was a secret technology program to access outer space using that technology.
Let's talk about Apollo, Robert, when we come right back in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back, Robert Morningstar with us. Robert, you believe we went to the moon, don't you?
I also believe that the photographs are doctored. And see, there's a real problem with the photographs. And some people say, oh, we didn't go to the moon. That photograph is hoaxed. Well, not exactly. The photographs are doctored not because we didn't go to the moon, but to hide what was found there.
Oh, yeah.
And that's why we curtailed our space program at Apollo 17. There was supposed to be an Apollo 18, and chop, it ended. Which is a good segue now to talk to you about the picture that I sent you today.
Okay, that's up on the website.
Which deals with the crashed spaceship on the moon. I first saw this spaceship about 4 years ago, or perhaps as much as five, when this story of the Apollo 20 secret mission, Apollo 20 secret military mission to the moon, was leaked by someone named William Rutledge and a couple of UFO writers. And Rutledge claimed to have been an astronaut who went on Apollo 20 and photographed the crashed spaceship and recovered the body, a mummified body of a female that looks to me to have been Mongolian, Tibetan, or ancient Chinese. It's on the internet. They now call her the Mona Lisa alien. And the film depicts scientists taking the body and removing these stitches, I would call them, primitive stitches that were keeping her eyelids closed and her mouth closed and sealed, and removing them to study the body. That's one aspect of it. But the other one is the photograph or the film purportedly taken from orbit of this crashed UFO that looks very much like a submarine, a very high-tech modern submarine, embedded in a trench on the moon. Now, I studied the film, and the film looks great, and I dismissed it for one reason. A, it was extremely good in color, but the reason I dismissed it as a hoax was that the camera loitered too long over one spot. In taking the film of the purported crashed spaceship, the film shoots for a very long time from this one angle above the moon. And we know that the Apollo command capsule, if it was that, or the orbiter, was in motion, orbiting. So I thought that an Apollo spacecraft can't loiter that long. Fuel is extremely expensive, and the quantity of it was so low. We know that Aldrin and Armstrong made the landing with maybe 10, 15 seconds of fuel left.
Yeah,
they hadn't brought it in a dead stick landing, as we call it, flying. Not quite dead stick, because he had fuel, but they might not have made it. And so they would, a computer, you know, the computer was supposed to land them, and then when they saw where it was going to put them down was in a crater, Armstrong took over and landed it by hand. It would have been a failure if we had left it in the hands of the computer. So anyway, the Apollo 20 crash spaceship, I dismissed it. The story was not credible to me. Rutledge said that he was so afraid for his life that he fled to Africa and lived there for so long that he almost lost his native English. So anyway, for those reasons, I dismissed it, but it popped up and it keeps popping up. And last night I had a very interesting psychic experience with Richard Dolan, who was being interviewed by Angel Espino on his new Jackal Radio. And Richard Dolan was discussing this very topic as at the moment that I came on. And he's discussing the photograph, and he says something like, well, that's a very interesting photograph, an intriguing photograph. It, you know, we should research it more. And he says, as a matter of fact, look, it has a number, AS20-9625. Bing, the light went up, and I said, you know, a kernel of truth, the ring of truth that I talked about before, that when you hear a certain, the ring of truth in a fact, I know the nomenclature of the Apollo cataloging system, and when he said AS20-9625, I said, wow, that sounds almost right. What's missing is the magazine. You see, each, in the catalog, the Apollo missions are the first number, AS-8, AS-9, AS-10, AS-12, 11, 12, etc. So AS-20 sounded right, but the next number should be a letter, and the letter designates a magazine of a film roll. So they go from A, I've seen them go from A to P, R, M, things like that. So that letter was missing, but the dash 9625 sounded right to me. So I said, well, let me, instinctively, I just jumped on Google. I heard Richard say that. I said, wow, something sounds right about this. So I jump into Google and I type in AS20-9625. The Apollo 20 picture comes up. But I said, you know, I know that Apollo 20 does not exist. I have a feeling that this was a leak, okay? I'll explain how a good leak works, and this apparently was a good leak. So instead of AS20, I took out AS20 and I put Apollo-9625, and pop, out it comes. AS12-P-96-9625. I look at the picture. It's a huge, huge panoramic picture of an area near a crater called Delport. And it's on the far side of the moon, and it's near, not far from Tsiolkovsky crater. It's one of the big craters on the far side of the moon. It has a huge, huge impact zone, but it has a high rise, almost mountainous area in the center of it. Tsiolkovsky, spelled with a T, T-S-I-O-L-K-O-V-S-K-Y, Tsiolkovsky. So in this Delaport region, I get this photograph, and I scan it, and instantly I see it. Just through what we would call the east of the main crater in the picture, I see it in the niche. There's this little image of that same spaceship that was purportedly an Apollo 20 find, but it's here in the Apollo 12 photo catalog. So I got to work, and you're the first person putting it out, George. You and Coast to Coast are revealing that there is really a crashed spaceship on the moon that was discovered not by Apollo 20, which I don't believe existed, but by Apollo 12. And so this is what I mean by it's a leak. There are a lot of good guys in NASA. There are a lot of good guys in the FBI and the CIA and the NSA. They are Americans. They believe in truth. They believe in the Constitution and the people's right to know. And they feel morally compelled to tell the truth, because that's what we're all sworn to. So what they do is they will leak the photograph to someone, in this case, this William Rutledge, and they'll say, look, this is real, but you can't get me in trouble, okay? You can't go out and tell people that this is an Apollo 12 photograph, but we want you to tell the people that the thing is real. So the leaker will take the information and dress it up to protect the source. And so what I believe happened here is the source, A, gave them the film, B, told them the general idea of what the mission was, and said, don't tell them it's Apollo 12. So they take it and they say, okay, we'll protect you. We'll take away the Apollo 12 signature. We'll take away the letter that designates the magazine. So if anybody from NASA looks at it, they'll say, oh, that's BS, you know? It's the wrong nomenclature. It doesn't have the magazine letter. So that can't possibly exist. Well, I went on a hunch, and Richard Dolan tripped this psychic moment, and my hunch turned out to be right. It's an Apollo 12 photograph in the cartridge or magazine P, and it's 9625. And there are maps that are correlated NASA maps that show you each mission, and they show you where each photograph was taken and the direction. And I have that map, and I went to it, and it is in this region near Delaport crater, which is, I said, lies to the west of Tsiolkovsky on the far side of the moon. So the photograph is authentic.
Robert, let's talk about some of the structures that they saw on the moon. Artificial, no doubt. Ingalls Swan, the late remote viewer.
Oh, yes. Ingalls Swan's book is phenomenal.
Penetration. He saw structures on the back end of the moon. Do you think these are
too?
Do you think these are structures that we made in ancient civilizations on this planet, or do you think they're extraterrestrial?
Well, I'm going to tell you. I discovered during this year, actually it was around May. I was again. There's this psychic element that I have, which I call intuition, but I was discussing some things with Dr. Edgar Mitchell and showing him some photographs that he had taken. Edgar Mitchell took a photograph of a UFO over the moon, and I found it. And you see, the astronauts took thousands and thousands of photographs, but I realized they don't know the material, because as soon as they come back,
those cartridges,
those magazines were taken. They're sent into NASA, and I don't think they got to see very many of them. And so researchers like myself and Richard Hoagland, for example, and others who have been, Ken Johnson, who's been working on this. Ken Johnson was on the inside, and he was one of those people that felt compelled to tell the truth. And he's brought out a lot of material about structures on the moon. So the upshot is that the Apollo 20 photograph, which is part of a hoax, is real. And that's how a good leak works. You embed it with plausible deniability and protection of the source. So the structures on the other side of the moon, I discovered a bridge. After talking to Edgar Mitchell about his mission and showing him the photograph that he took of this really anomalous object floating over a very large rock that he was commissioned to photograph, he went to Frau Moro near Cone Crater. And there's some really strange things in that region that I picked up. You know, when I read the NASA mission reports for senior managers, they're published, by the way, you can buy them. Every Apollo mission had a mission report that was, at the time it was put out, originally written, it was secret. But after so many years, NASA started to put them out. So I bought them all. And in it, I saw one thing that really intrigued me. It looked like a crater with an arrowhead in it, and the crater was called Weird Crater.
Oh.
And so, one of my jokes with Edgar Mitchell is that when I find out that he's going to be someplace and a friend of mine is going to see him, you know, he takes questions. I ask them to ask Edgar Mitchell, what's weird about Weird Crater? You see? And because it was only a little thumbnail that, in which I saw this. So finally I got a good orbital shot of the area that was explored by Dr. Mitchell and Alan Shepard. And what's weird about Weird Crater is that triangle that I saw in the thumbnail is formed by the impact of three meteors, all of the same diameter.
Isn't that strange?
Now that is not really possible. And this is a really strange phenomenon on the moon. It's called the doublet craters. Surrounding the moon, there are double craters that appear regularly. ... They're doubles, you know, and they're both the same size. It's not possible. What is possible is artillery, in my estimation, in my view.
That's right. That little missiles.
That makes two craters, you know, of the same size. But to think that three meteors of the same diameter could hit one zone and one crater, and the doublet phenomenon tells me that not everything is right with the interpretation of the selenologist. A selenologist is a scientist of the moon, named after the goddess Selena. You know,
I mean, Robert, What was Stanley Kubrick, the late Stanley Kubrick's involvement?
I believe Stanley Kubrick's mission was to reveal the presence, the alien presence, to the American public and to the world public through 2001, A Space Odyssey. And I would like to point out to everyone listening to me that it took me 40 years to see this. Stanley Kubrick reveals the face of the alien in the last 2 seconds of the movie, of the film, at the climax, at the crescendo of Azo Sprach Zarathustra, the theme of 2001, A Space Odyssey. When they play that music at the end and you see the star child being born in orbit above planet Earth,
with his thumb in his mouth.
You see the fetus. It seems to still be in the sack. And so the fetus, you see it in profile in sunlight. It's slowly rotating. The baby's turning to face you. In the last 2 seconds of the film, the face turns from sunlight into a partial shadow. And in the shadow, you will see the face of the gray alien. And zip, it disappears. Do you remember when you first saw 2001, A Space Odyssey? How
yes.
It faded so quickly, and it left you, say, wanting more. That's what I wanted to see more. Why did it fade so fast? Because it was implanting the image in all of us subliminally. But prior to that, the movie had revealed an alien presence on the moon, an alien presence that had been interacting with humankind since its proto-simian days, right? The monolith appeared to the monkeys. If you read the book, 2001, A Space Odyssey, which was based the novel was originally called The Sentinel. I'll get back to that in a second. But the monolith was a teaching machine. It appears to all the monkeys, and they all surround it, and they feel smooth surfaces. For the first time, these primitives feel a smooth surface, and they feel a right angle. And the proportion was very important. This is not told in the movie. It's told in the book. The proportion of the monolith was 1:4:9. The edge, 1. Mm-hmm. To the width, 4. To the length, 9, which is the square of the first three numbers. Okay? So when this monolith appears and they approach it, the monolith puts out sort of a telepathic beam that reaches all the monkeys' minds. And it starts to take them over, and it starts to teach them how to do things. Now, there are old monkeys, and there are young monkeys in this congress of monkeys. There's a term, you know, like a flock of birds and a school of fish. And there's a word, Congress of Baboons, so I'm using that for this Congress of these monkey men. Well, the machine, the teaching machine, the monolith, is conscious, and it beams to some monkeys to take strands and try to tie knots. So some monkeys grab what we would call twine or rope or fiber and start to turn it and start to tie knots. Another monkey...
Hold on for a second. We'll get right into that, Robert. Already at the top of the hour. Fast night. We'll chat a little bit more and take phone calls next.